Welcome to the Floor Academy Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, former owner of Illustrious Hardwoods, licensed contractor in the state of Arizona. And joining me this week is Matt Garcia, friend of the show, returning guest, and owner of Craftsman Hardwood Flooring in San Angelo, Texas. And we're going to be talking about exiting the field. And I constantly see contractors asking, how do you find reliable help? Comments like, no one's going to do it as well as me. No one's ever going to take as much pride in the company as me. What else did I have on this list? We've got, if I'm not there to watch them, they're going to take shortcuts. And I call bullshit on all of it. I call bullshit. I know it's possible to find and acquire great people that can be held to a standard that they will accept, and they will excel at it without you micromanaging them. And if I would have asked Matt 24 months ago, he was on the other side of that coin. And now 24 months later, after swallowing a lot of really, really hard pills and struggling and wanting to quit at some points, his business has made a huge turnaround. And they're not only more profitable, he doesn't have to be in the field as much, and they've paid out more to their employees while still putting more money in their own pocket as well, which he's winning on every single level, and his companies buy into the culture and take pride in his company, which is awesome. So we're going to get into that in just a minute. Why are you here? I mean, I just kind of told you, right? Doesn't that sound like what you want in a business? So every week, Floor Academy is tackling the business side of contracting so that you can run a more profitable, more efficient business to provide yourself with a lifestyle lift so that you're not having to go through the same old struggle and frustrations that you have right now. It's not easy. It's not supposed to be easy, but you can do it. And every week, if you take away 1-2 golden nuggets from each episode, apply them and actively work on them in your business, you will get better. You will get where you are going. Make sure you check out FloorAcademyPod.com. Check out the shop. See what we got going on with our mastermind groups over there. If you really want to take your business to the next level, that is an investment that you can make in your business and yourself that truly will pay big dividends when you commit to doing the work required to work on your business instead of just in it. You can help support the show at patreon.com/Floor Academy. Even $5 a month goes a long way to helping me continue to create this content and get it in front of you every week. I would like to talk about Cronus Flooring Software. So if you're looking for an affordable and easy way to manage your business, Cronus Flooring Software is your solution to streamline your workflow, manage leads and inventory, and schedule installations. It includes every feature needed to support your business at an extremely affordable price. It's user-friendly, easy to navigate, fully integrates with QuickBooks Online, so you can quickly find out your profit margins and where you're winning or losing on a project. You can import your hours, all the fun stuff. Visit chronosoft.com to schedule a demo, and Victor and Chesney will get you taken care of right away. It's chronosoft.com. Let them know I sent you over. I'm sure you will enjoy it. And in fact, if you're listening to this live, I just scheduled a demo for, I think this episode is going to come out in March, but if you're listening live, February 20th, we're going to be doing a live demo in the, there's an event in the Floor Academy group. Go click on it. Say you want to attend, get the Zoom information. We're going to be doing a live demo on Zoom and going over it and seeing what they have available for you. That's enough out of me. Matt, welcome back to the show. Why don't you give a quick intro to those people that don't know you yet, and we'll start digging into this topic of how you have slowly found yourself not in the field 8, 10, 12-hour days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm Matt Garcia, Craftsman Hardwood Flooring, and been in the trade for over 20 years, and out of San Angelo, Texas. Made the move from California to Texas about probably about nine years ago. and had to restart my business up. And I was basically subbing for retail flooring stores when I was in California, in a partnership with my dad, just doing installation. So when I moved over to Texas, I wanted to start a retail side of things. I saw a lot of opportunity, especially specializing in wood floors.
Okay. Did you ever think it wouldn't just be you?
No. I always wanted a business. I didn't really realize what would look like. You know, it's one of those things where I always felt like I wanted this business, but I never really thought about what it actually took to build a business. So I always imagined it would be more than just me, but what that actually looks like was much different.
Okay. So let's dig into that, right? So what changed that you realized, right? I think because it's a mindset thing, is I want this, but I don't know how to get it. And when you went to get it, you probably realized, like most of us, that it's not at all what you thought it was.
Yeah. So, you know, you have this idea in your head, or at least I did, when I wanted, you know, because I've always wanted to be, I've always had a business ownership mindset. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't realize is how much is managing people and, you know, so many things that has nothing to necessarily to do with, like, let's say flooring per se, you know, this people management skills and learning systems and processes and being able to, you know, incentivize people and motivate people, you know, and all those things. And, you know, when I realized how much effort goes into that, I guess I was naive in a respect, just thinking, oh, you know, people will naturally do what I do, or, you know, like they would just pick it up and it would just flow and I wouldn't have to manage things so much. And what I realized is that pretty much all successful companies that, you know, want to grow and scale have great management systems if they want to succeed. And I think that was pretty big awakening for me. And, you know, we had talked earlier, you intimately know our business because of us being in the mastermind for a couple of years. And so you saw that, you know, kind of happy-go-lucky, oh, I'm going to build this business. And then, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into?
Well, I think we all start there, right? It's all rose eyes and super pretty and rainbows and unicorns. And if we weren't foolish enough to create it, I don't think anybody would ever do it. And it's that you get to create this thing that you can find, and then to go and build it and realize that you actually did it is the ultimate reward. And it's you got to face the struggles in the middle to really appreciate it. I'm super proud of what you've built. And I know, because I know 2 years of masterminds and then I want to say it was probably about 18 months in where you hit a wall and you got really, really frustrated with everything that was happening, kind of wanted to quit, weren't happy with the results you were getting. But that last 6 months, everything really, really started coming together. And since that 2 year mark, it's continued to move forward consistently, and you've been seeing even better results. And so there's just, you have to put in the effort, and a lot of people put that effort in, right? Oh, I'm going to lose weight. Okay. So you ate right for one day and you walked your 10,000 steps for one day and you get on the scale the next morning and you're like, well, how'd it go up 0.2 pounds? What the hell is this all about? Like, I did all the right things yesterday. It doesn't work that way. It took me, I mean, most people that are listening knew that I was on a weight loss journey. I'll admit it. I've been a hot mess since November. There was a lot of family stuff that happened. My father passed away and holidays and my life fell apart. So I was down to 200 pounds and I posted about it on Facebook and made a big deal out of it. I was 223 the other day. I haven't hopped on the scale in 2 days because I don't want to know. It's only getting worse. So I've let myself down because I quit doing the hard work and now there's no results to show for it anymore. And your business is exactly the same way. If you get frustrated and you quit, you're not going to get that out of it. And so what I really want to talk about is that there was a time where you had to be in the field. 2 years ago, projects were not getting done in the field if you were not there to look over your crews for the most part. And you were kind of like one and a half for a long time. And there was somebody, you know, your lead guy, you could leave on his own and he could accomplish most everything, but needed some direction. And the other part of it was like, if you weren't there holding them accountable, end of story, like nothing would get done. And now you're in a much better place to where at least 50% of the time you're not out there. We haven't talked in a minute, but I know it was at least 50% of the time you were pretty much able to get away and delegate things out. So what has that been like? What has it taken to really get them to buy into holding themselves accountable and giving them the systems they need to feel confident they know what they're doing?
Yeah, a big part of that was a bit of trial and error. You know, I think at one point I thought, okay, I read these business books. I'm going to trust my team. I'm going to let them go, you know, do their own thing and just, you know, take the reins off. And it was a disaster. You know, I just didn't have the management in place for it. And that was an awakening, realizing, I can't just, you know, take this bit of advice to trust my team and then walk away. They need structure. They need SOPs. They need guidance, you know, so that they can do things on their own, you know. And a lot of it was they had skills to be able to do things on their own. And, but, you know, I didn't really have the full package. I just thought, you know, they might fail a little bit and then things will iron out. Well, it's just money was running out just because, you know, we were just running low on profitability. If I didn't realize how much my management was affecting the bottom line until I took my hands off of it. And I go, I was having a lot bigger effect on our productivity and the management and all that kind of thing. And so that's when I took I kind of wanted to just quit at that point. That was maybe the first time I wanted to quit. I didn't realize I had a lot more work to do beyond that, but I just kind of realized, I got to put a lot into this. I don't know if it's worth it. And obviously I stuck it out, but what I realized was, I had good people working for me. That wasn't the problem. And some of them actually were, you know, more self-motivated. But you know, I had a couple of crews and, you know, really just trying to find that sweet spot and do more training and more management and things like that. So one of the things that we developed that made a huge difference was a performance pay system.
Okay.
You know, I realized that one of the big epiphanies that I had is that if you want to stop micromanaging things, you got to have a structure that manages things for you. So the structure can manage the employees and how things are produced, and you can just keep pointing back to the structure rather than managing every little thing. So you give them a guide on how they can proceed, how they can be profitable. And what I realized is my team wasn't bad. They honestly were all great people in my team. They needed the tools to be able to be effective. And what I didn't realize is how much I was guiding every step of the process to where they weren't learning those critical ways to manage and produce the outcome that the company needed. So I was dictating the outcome and managing it myself. So when I step away, well, they're unguided at that point. So that was where I started the journey of building a management structure, like with our performance pay and our project analysis, profitability sheets, and, you know, those types of management systems where they can see, you know, where the project is at, how they could be more productive, you know, that they could actually start policing themselves and managing themselves. And that was a big component that I didn't realize was that people need a structure to for them to be able to succeed. You are going to get the diamond in the rough every once in a while. That's probably more going to be their own entrepreneur or business mindset person that maybe could just, you know, run things without management at all. But, you know, if you really want a duplicatable, scalable system, you need a structure that can help guide people to produce, you know, what the business needs. And so once I realized that, the real work began. And, you know, that was it. I felt like it was, I mean, I had told you, you know, in times of, you know, despair, that I felt like I already had a full-time job with overtime and I just took on another full-time job. Mm-hmm. But the thing was, is I, you know, things got too far down the line, where our profitability just wasn't there. It wasn't like I could just stop being in the field, because I needed that income to pay all the payroll and all the, you know, everything that we had already done, you know, paying salespeople, running a building, you know, and all the costs associated with running a retail store, you know, those bills had to get paid. And so, you know, I was in a position where, hey, you know, if I want this to work and I have all these people relying on me, you know, that have families to be successful, guess what? Nights, weekends, evenings, I mean, this is going to be my life for a little bit. And, and you know, it, and it's not stuff that pays off right away. That is what it makes it so frustrating. And if I could redo it, and I think that's what's great about this podcast, is I would say, hey, learn from this, get these things rolling a little earlier on in the process. Yeah. That way you're not stuck in between a rock and a hard place where you just got to sweat equity your business to make it run. There's definitely an easier way to go about it. And I hope that's what people get from this episode. Is, you know, to get those things in play, you know, and I thought I was getting things in place, but it's like what you said, you know, it just because you have a picture in your head of what it should look like and how it should be, there's no free lunches in business. There's no, you know, I deserve this in business. There's none of that. It either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, you got to figure it out. And sometimes that just takes, you know, time and effort. So
yeah,
that's in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, that was a lot, man. There's so much that I sucked. We could make like four episodes out of all of that. Like is that you're talking about holding the employees accountable because you actually communicated what was required of them and explained how they could be successful. And I think that's the major difference in what's now allowing you to pull yourself out of the field. Is a lot of us are like, well, I trained him. I told him, I showed him how to do the floor. Now he should be able to do it. Like, I don't need to go check on him. I said, go do these steps. You should be able to do it. Or they should be able to install the shower or they, whatever it is, right? It's like, I've been training them for 4 years. They're just stupid and useless. And I can't data. You've actually put things in place that not only communicate out, this is what the project is. This is how you consistently take it from point A to point Z. This is how you know how much money you're making. This is how you know if you're going to earn the bonus on this project. And so now they can take ownership and pride in it because there's something on the line for them, as opposed to, I'm going to pay you $20 an hour. Shut up. Go do it the way I said to do it. And then when you're not doing it, I'm going to stand over you and yell at you some more because I don't know how else to manage you other than to just tell you to move out of my way. And you were there. You were doing a set of steps and you were like, they can't do it. They don't know what they're doing and I have to do it. And then you let them do it and it took longer and it was slower. But they developed the skill set to actually do really fancy, cool treads. And they can now do that moving forward and they'll get better. Not that they get done all the time, but you had to step back and lose a little bit to gain a lot. And I think it's a hard equation for us to mentally work through in business because we're like, if I'm not being productive, I'm not making money. But if you constantly push the employees out of the way, you're never going to be productive.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. It's almost like when you see something not getting done the best way that you think it is, you want to step in and try to take it over. But it really is one of those things. I've had to learn to get an appreciation for training and having pride in watching other people succeed under my leadership, because it is tough being on the floor, you know, on the tools for so many years, feeling like, oh, I'm not doing anything if I'm training, or you know, just that sense of, I can't say that I got one particular thing done, but you know, if I trained, you know, some of my employees to do different skills and invested into them, well, that's going to go a lot further than anything that I would have done on that particular day. But a lot of, you know, getting out of that mentality, like that's what's tough. And, you know, it's a lot of it is mindset more than anything, learning to be a leader. You know, you think, oh, if I'm just good at what I do, that's leadership. I could lead by example. And while that is true, it also, it can't be just that. So, you know, you have to have a lot of, you know, you got to have grace, you got to have patience, you got to have foresight, you know, of where people are at and how to develop them. And, you know, I think a big part that clicks for me is I love seeing people succeed, especially if they are under my leadership. And it even feels weird saying my leadership. It's like something that I've had to, you know, get that head trash out of the way of saying, no, you know, it's okay. I'm a leader, and it's not a pompous way to think. It's not a, that's my position in the company. And as soon as the quicker I get over myself, thinking that, you know, that's, you know, a positional thing, the quicker I can get this business running better and I can take ownership of things. And so, yeah, I mean, that's really, you know, all a big part of it, you know, is just being able to read the company and where everybody is and adapt and, you know, get the business what it really needs, not just what I particularly want to do.
There you go. I like that, because it's about figuring out what the business is, not you. If you want to own a job, then the business can be you. But if you want to have a true business with employees in it, the business isn't you. It's its own entity, and it needs to be fed accordingly. And it's going to tell you what it needs, and you're going to be able to step. If you actually step back and look at it, you're going to realize where it's deficient very, very quickly. And that's the biggest thing, is actually finding the time to step back and look at it. And you were doing that 2.5-3 hours every other week. And this is a serious time commitment. And I get that. But without having done that, I don't think you would have been able to work through a lot of the problems. And you get stuck in that same old trap that everybody's in of, I'll just go work harder. I'll just go get more done myself. And as you said, that led to you being in a spot where the profitability of the company was so dependent upon your actions that although the employees covered themselves and were getting work done, a majority of the money that was produced was so dependent upon the actions you had, which are actually very limiting when you start looking at the bigger picture. Because sure, you can go out in the field and you can produce $125, $150, maybe $200 an hour. But if you go network with a couple of builders or land a couple of larger projects, you can produce a couple $1,000 an hour. And so the time investment just doesn't make sense for what the company actually needs. It's dying for money, so you have to find a way to get the field to work in a more efficient way so you can continue to feed them this higher dollar stuff that you're able to go find. And that was a big switch for you, was being able to pull yourself out and really trust them. But there was a lot of things that had to go into place first. It wasn't just the incentive program of you know, what are you calling it? It's, why can't I? It's not work for hire. What are you doing? It's employee performance pay. There we go. I know what. Yes, yeah. You're doing performance pay, right? The harder you work, the more money you get. There's a base salary. If you hit X, Y, and Z on these metrics that you've developed, then you get there's more pay available out of the project. So they're incentivized to not only work smart and efficient, but you know, cleanly and safely, and then they get some extra money on top. But it wasn't just doing that. There was a lot of spending time actually developing out the nuts and bolts of how do they install, how do they prep, how do they go and repeat the same actions on every project, and then they're able to consistently demonstrate they don't need you around to do it. So what was that like, looking into and trying to figure out where the deficiencies were in even the communication you had previously had with them and the training you had previously done versus what you've built out now?
You know, what's funny. And this isn't something that I planned, but when we implemented the performance pay, it was amazing how much of the training that actually solved, because I was kind of going about training more so in the technical side of things. And don't get me wrong, you need that. But what I realized is once I incentivized performance, and you know, that's optimized. We don't want rushing or cutting corners. So it's, that's why I call it performance, because it's not like how subcontractors pay, you know, get paid where it's like, hey, do this job, I don't care how much time it takes, you know, or you know what I mean? Like if you get through it really fast, you're gonna make the money. Yeah. This is like, we have quality standards and SOPs that also have to be followed to, you know, hit your metrics. And so, you know, there's a built-in component to performance that has to do with efficiency that incentivizes the actual technical side of things. And what I realized is that if somebody's motivated and they realize that we have attached value to everything that they do and it's completely merit-based, there's a lot more ownership that gets taken with what they're doing. And so, you know, they know that they're signing up for a lot more than an hourly wage with us now. And a lot of the training, I feel like, it's more self-motivated learning. So, you know, they're paying a lot more attention to what somebody that is a more experienced, higher performing employee, because we show what everybody makes. And so they start paying attention to the higher performers a lot more, which is then training them. So that's something that I didn't realize because I've actually taken the throttle off a little bit on the technical side training, because I realized they are actually learning from each other and growing and developing at a lot faster pace than when I was trying to, you know, give them a step-by-step guide, if that makes sense. So I'm not saying, obviously, we go to trainings, we invest in that. I'm on, you know, that is one of the things, if I do go on site, I try to focus on not being on the tools, but actually training them to do things. Mm-hmm. But it was amazing how it clicked more for them to be more of a self-motivated learner. And so I'm actually kind of rethinking about my training program, because I do want a more documented structured system, but I have realized that, you know, on a merit-based system that rewards for performance, they are a lot more incentivized to grow and adapt and learn. And so, that's actually something I'm kind of evaluating right now on how I want to approach training, just because that, to me, that actually really changes the game on how I would structure learning for them. And that's actually why I, you know, rethinking mentorship type training. And, you know, I've kind of discussed that a little bit with you. And part of that is because I have realized, oh my gosh, is the structure of incentivization actually, I can train people much quicker than what I had anticipated. And so I know that's kind of a mouthful, but it's really incredible how much that's had an effect. You don't see too much performance pay system in flooring right now, and I'm really intrigued. I want to explore that out a lot more.
I think it's great, and you're hitting on a lot of things that I think are missed, right? And so it's a lot of times we do only focus on the technical. Here's how you have to make this cut. Here's how you have to apply the thin set. Here's how you have to apply the finish. Here's how you have to the prep the floor this way. That it's on and on. Dude, that stuff sucks. It's so boring. Yeah. I don't care about what ANSI says or what the TCNA says, or I like doing it right, folks. Don't get me wrong, but to an 18, 22, 24 year old kid coming in, they're getting told all of this information that makes no sense. Nobody's explaining the whys, and now there's a system in place that incentivizes them that the more they know, the more they can get paid because they can apply that knowledge faster to be more successful at the project. They're going to pay attention to how the other people move now and ask about, you know, why did you do it that way? Well, because if I stack up five cuts instead of walk to the saw five times, I've made four less trips. So now I can get more done, which gets the project done faster, which puts more money in my pocket. They can start having different conversations, and not everybody's money motivated, but I don't think everybody's money motivated on your team either. And yet they're still finding a reason to buy into this and work harder because of it. But I think it's because they actually understand the dynamics of it. I know at one point when you were first implementing it, we were talking about it. They didn't know how they actually earned money for the company because they don't know the square foot rates that you're charging. And they don't know all of the dynamics of the company. But once you implemented the performance pay, they actually started seeing how them as an individual contributed to the entire pie of the company. And that brings value to a person when they know what they're actually doing to move the needle. I didn't care what I did when I worked at Target as the guy that was supposed to stock the shelves. And I would walk away from people when I was stocking shelves that wanted to come up and ask me a question because I didn't want to deal with it. I was there to just stock the shelves and earn my minimum wage. But I also didn't know what that did for the company other than, you know, I mean, I get it now. Like, I put stock out, people grab it, they go pay for it, money is exchanged, and Target makes money. I get that. But I didn't care. There wasn't any reason for me to want to grow in that position and find out what the next thing I could do because I didn't understand any of the value I was bringing to the company. I want to know your answer. I'm going to interrupt us. We're going to do a quick break, and then I want to kind of hear how the mindset of the team changed once they started learning the value. Quick word from Johns Manville. Compatible with all GoBoard products is the new GoBoard membrane. If you're asking why a membrane when GoBoard itself is waterproof through and through, the answer is simple. A membrane extends your GoBoard installation for mud pans, steam rooms, and shared walls requiring a fire-rated board under the waterproofing. Now, who's going to be the most badass GoBoard installer out there? You are. You can visit www.jm.com/GoBoard for all the product details. Go check out all the other product offerings they have, their generous warranty on, you know, additional availability of other sealants you can use to finish their projects when you are working with their products. And, you know, if you catch Shauna online, let her know that you are catching GoBoard on Floor Academy and you appreciate them sponsoring the show. Matt, what was the change in your team as they actually started to understand their value, and how important do you realize it is to convey that to an employee now, what they actually bring to a company?
You know, that was one of those unintentional things that I started to realize is how much more confident they became when they realized the value that they produced. I mean, one of our guys struggled at first. The first probably 3 months, he could barely break even on our performance pay structure. And I knew he's going to have a little bit of trouble, but it was eye-opening when we, you know, tracked to that level of detail that I could show him, hey, this is not personal. This is where we're at, and this is what the business can afford, you know, without, you know, tapping into the profit of the company. Because, you know, if we don't maintain the level of profit in the business that we need to sustain, you know, that's going to hurt everybody. There ain't going to be a business around for us to work for. And, you know, we want to offer more benefits, and we want to grow and produce more opportunities for them. Well, you know, we can show them, hey, look, this is where you're at, you mm-hmm. know. And so it was a gut punch for one of my guys at first, seeing that he was barely breaking even for the company, because he really did care about the company. And I told him, hey, listen, I know you can do it. I want to invest into you. You know, you're a great person. You have loyalty to the company. And I just told him, I believe in you. I know you can do it. But, you know, this is really the only way that we can afford to pay you what you're really worth. And, you know, for him to see those numbers not looking great, that was tough for him. But I have to say, he actually, for the all last year, you know, we implemented for about a year, for, you know, all last year. We started in January. And he actually, we won monthly bonuses, and he earned a $4,000 bonus in 1 month. And that was, you know, the highest earned bonus out of any month, you know, than anybody else. And so he went out and bought a new truck. His confidence level was just through the moon, you know. And, you know, that $4,000, that's on top of their base wage. You know, they're guaranteed. They never got an hourly pay cut. All that money was just what was being left on the table that they could have earned. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody ever got a pay cut, you know, per hour when we started this. So all that bonus money was just what was literally the performance that was left on the table that they were capable of. They just didn't realize it. And once we could attach that value to it, their confidence level really boosted. But, you know, I'm not going to say it was all roses. You know, figuring that out, because I had about 3 months with this guy, and I mean, I felt like he was nearly in tears. One day, you know, when I had the reports, I wanted to show him, like, hey, we're 3 months in, and it's not looking great. And it just tore him up that, you know, he just felt like he was working hard and it wasn't paying off. And mm-hmm. I just had to tell him, hey, this isn't about, you can't get overtime to make this system work. It's about efficiency. I want you to work, you know, solid 40 hours a week and have a great income and a great quality of life, you know, and really, you know, my system doesn't reward overtime.
Yes.
You could earn more with overtime, but not if you're doing overtime because you're not efficient, right? So that's what we're trying to incentivize, so that we can afford to pay them and it really does produce value for the company. Because obviously overtime is not necessarily something that produces more value for the company. It's what you produce that makes more value to the company. And that's what I was trying to hone in on him. And, you know, to see him go from the one of the lower performers as a journeyman, he was one of the lower performers, to going to making, you know, the highest bonus. That was just, I mean, that was such a happy moment just to see the change in his countenance.
Well, and it's done something. Everyone's always like, well, if I have hourly employees, they're not going to work hard. They're going to milk it, right? They're going to go get all the overtime they can. One, you have a way of tracking them now that a project is worth X amount of dollars. And if they come in under that, they earn a percentage of X that's left. So they're incentivized to not only work efficiently, and I don't want to say faster, it's truly more efficiently to get it done,
yes.
Which helps you. So the company's more profitable because now you can fit in more projects that they can go work efficiently on. And so they don't need overtime to make more money. They're getting done exactly what they should be getting done, and you get more projects done. So everyone's still technically getting the same amount of money because they're getting it in their bonus. They're getting with their overtime pay in the bonus as the reward of, hey, you got this done really well. Here's what's left from that little pool of money that was created by that project. So let's divvy that up, and then we're going to start another one and we'll divvy it up. And so if they can actually fit in more projects because they work so well, they'll end up making way more money than they would have by trying to milk the clock and dragging projects out.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so We got 30% more productivity. We got 150% more profit, and we paid out $50,000 in bonuses last year. And that was on top of giving hourly raises as well. So you combine all that together. And I mean, it was just a total game changer. And honestly, I'm not micromanaging anymore either. That structure is managing them, you know, because we have built in incentives, you know, even for skills. You know, you're depending on whether you're an apprentice one, apprentice two, journeyman, or master craftsman, you know, you're going to be incentivized to gain skills and productivity and produce your quality. So it's, you know, it's really, you know, one of the things that I almost just kind of like get emotional about it, because it's like, we went out for a training in Dallas a couple of weeks ago, and we're such a strong team. You know, we rented a house and we played pool and games, you know, after training, you know, we had reps and the host of the facility taking us out to dinner. I mean, we had my crew was so happy. You know, we brought sales, everybody was out there. And we had such a great time together. There was no drama. There was no turmoil. You know, I was just like, I mean, I came back glowing from that trip, because I just couldn't believe, you know, how far we had come. We're making the money that we should. We're, you know, and honestly, I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg.
You know? For sure.
We just have implemented for one. You know, you know, I have so many other things that I want to implement. Mm-hmm. I'm on fire now. I'm going, hey, this is incredible. If we can make this much ground in 1 year, what can we do over the next couple? Because like I said, a lot of this stuff is work. I can't just always snap my fingers and make it happen. I'm able to afford to pay people to do a lot more of this, which, well, how you had mentioned, it gets more exponential because the delegation grows and grows and grows. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm excited to see where we can take things in the next couple of years. I think we're just tapping into to what we really can do.
I believe it. I think that you're going to have really big things happen. I think that you're a company that I know is being watched by some other larger companies within the hardwood industry at this point. I would hope that people listening to the show start paying attention to what you have going on. And I like it. You're right. As you can delegate out more, the company continues to grow in value. And so there's a way of looking at this. And again, like, you got really frustrated at one point. You're like, the numbers aren't adding up. It's not worth it. I can make more on my own. I'm sick of struggling. Like, there's no reason that my wife and I shouldn't be able to afford a vacation for us and our kids. And like, you were pissed, man. And you had every right to be, because there was enough gross revenue coming in that the numbers weren't adding up correctly for what was happening. And it was because there wasn't enough accountability in place for everybody to pull their weight. And I think that's where guys and gals struggle, is they don't get over that hump of being able to hold the team accountable. And so they're like, well, I can earn more on my own. And you can, if you can't figure out how to run the business, you can go make your $100,000, $150,000, maybe $200,000 a year, have 10 or 20 grand in profit after you've paid yourself a really, really good salary, and you're doing great. Don't get me wrong. All right. That was me. And I was content with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's not.
It just depends on what you want to build or not. You know, it depends on what your goals are.
Yep. But now we look at it from building something that's potentially sellable as this company grows and has more systems and processes in place. And if it the business can only be sold for more than assets when you're able to remove yourself and somebody else can plug themselves in, and it continues to go. And at a low end multiplier, you can sell it for 3 times the net profit. And that's net profit. It's going to be after you can't be pulling your salary out at the end of the year, the net profit, and trying to include that in the number, right? Because the new person's going to have to be able to pay themselves a salary. So it's after
everything is
paid. And so if it's $50,000, right, if you get this company and it's got 2 employees and yourself, and it can kind of run without you, and it's got $50,000 net profit at the end of the year, it's worth $150,000. That's all you're going to get out of it. Maybe you can convince somebody to give you a 4x multiplier, but probably not. So you got $150,000. But what people don't realize is that if you can pour that 50K back in to trying to find a way to make it better, well, maybe the next year you pump out 150. Right now, a 3x multiplier is 450. So you just 3x'd your investment in 1 year. And the growth of your company and what it's worth can go parabolic as you're able to make it more efficient and require you less and less and have more people doing parts. And that's what I don't think people always realize. That's where I went wrong. When I was running Illustrious, I pulled every single penny out to become debt free. Virtually every penny. There's still retainage in there to keep things afloat and whatnot, but virtually every extra penny was pulled out. It paid off my house, the student loans for college for my wife and I. The vehicles are owned outright. There's no debt, which is great. It was an awesome feeling. Except then I learned that I do need some kind of stress in my life. And I also learned that had I actually invested into maybe buying some advertising, I would have been forced to have to hire a crew instead of playing the game of, well, I'm booked out 10 weeks. It's just me. I'll just raise my prices and make sure that I get down to being booked out 6 weeks. But any project I land in the meantime is even more profitable. My mindset on how I would have done things has shifted now that I've been able to step back and look at it. And so if you want to remain a one man show, like, sure, raise your rates all you want as you get further booked out. That's not a problem. But if you want to truly grow a business, it's the worst thing you can do because you're cutting off potential work. And you're going to, if you put yourself in the position of being forced to grow, you're going to have to solve that problem. And I think you've done that. You did that late last year. There was a gentleman in your area that came back from out of town who had grown up there and sand and finisher, but didn't want to do it anymore. And he wasn't looking to sub. And so you were able to bring him on, but I know you didn't have the work for him right away, but that little fire under your butt to be like, how do I find the time to go acquire the work to keep everyone busy? And I think that's really where the switch for you started, was you were like, I can't be in the field because now I have to go acquire the work. So what was all, like, this is me, you know, from the outside summarizing it, but what was that like when you took on another livelihood, but it was pretty tight.
Yeah. A lot of it had to do with, so some of it was a little bit self-correcting, because I think even one of the times in one of the mastermind meetings, I started realizing that the more I was in the nitty gritty and in the nuts and bolts, I actually was making less. So I literally got to the point where I had too many people that, if I was out there not taking care of things, I actually would make less. So what I produced out in the field was counteracting me not, you know, taking care of the business side, you know, going out and, you know, bidding more estimates, you know, getting better rates, you know, networking, you know, making relationships, getting more projects coming in, and, you know, just really working on that more high leverage stuff, was really starting to show in the books, because I'm going, holy cow, I'm all stressed out trying to be on the tools and run the business, and I'm actually making less. Like, that was where I was going, okay, this is kind of hitting me in the face right now. I'm actually to the point where, and part of it was actually us tracking numbers good enough to know, realize, holy cow, the more I actually am in the field, the less I make. That's not a coincidence here. So once we started running those numbers and tracking it, that's where I really started realizing, holy cow, like, that I have got to work on this high leverage stuff. If I want to, because at that point we actually were starting to see that income and the profits rise. And so, you know, like when I hired that, the guy that was coming back into town, you know, that was already experienced, you know, that was why I wanted to jump on it, but also realizing, okay, if I want to bring on this guy, I got to have work for him immediately. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To keep him sustained. And like you said, it wasn't, you know, we weren't, we weren't as booked out as we usually were, and he had more of a sand and finish skill set, and so it was partly getting, you know, projects that were within his skill set to, you know, to get more of those, because we're actually kind of not taking on as many of those just because didn't have the manpower behind it. Mm-hmm. And so now we do. And so, you know, turning that on, I had to switch gears, go out there and hustle on the business side to bring that in.
Which I mean, again, it was all of it's coming together, right? It was like, first you had to, here's another part of the discussion is that you attempted to train the field and get them kind of up to speed and hold them accountable. And then you went and you had to work with the sales staff in the office, and you were working on building that and making that stronger. And yet the field started falling apart. And so you were like, oh my gosh, okay, it's been 3 months. Like, I got to go back. I got to fix the field. But you left the office and the sales side started falling apart as you were fixing the field. And like, it was this back and forth and trying to hold it all together. And you're just one person. But the little investments over time started paying off. It was, you were able to ignore fires and say, okay, I see it, but let me finish putting this one all the way out. And then I'm going to go put that one out. And I think that's a huge step in realizing that we can run around and constantly put everything out, or we can kind of, we can address it and start working on a fix, but let's finish dealing with this one. And sometimes you realize that there was a problem of, oh, they're related. And if I step back and look at where the actual source of the problems is coming from, I can just go put out the source of it and I correct both fires at the same time. But that wasn't happening when you were too busy running around and not taking time to step back. So what was that like how did you learn to really balance and let go and just start being like, it's there, I see it, but hold on, I'm over here?
I mean, the biggest step was not having to be in the field all the time, but also, you know, and I would say, you know, being a CEO of the company, you are going to operate that more out of the office. But part of where I'm at right now is I also don't want to be a slave to the office side. You know, I don't want to be doing sales and I don't want to be doing administration. And I, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's more inclined, you know, if I'm, you know, strategizing the business and I'm creating SOPs and researching softwares and, you know, like these things that I know is going to exponentially improve the business, you know, over time. I got to be careful not to get sucked into all the sales, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, cause I am the expert and I've been doing it for a long time and I'm passionate about it. So it's, you know, it's easy for me to hear a conversation in the office and I'm going, oh man, that would be really awesome to go sell a pattern for, you know, and cause I, you know, I do have a passion for that, but now I'm going, hey, I gotta, you know, take my own medicine here and not get sucked into the field side of the you know, the office side. Mm-hmm. Of the work, you know, where I'm not doing as many measures and you know, that's still an area where, you know, we need to I would like to get a bigger sales staff because you know, I do kind of fill in for that a little bit more so here and there, because yep. that really does tie into the growth of the business, because I'm experimenting with marketing and some other sources of things for us to really take it to the next level. And some of that I just got to be hands-on, and you know, sales presentations, I kind of want to be, you know, understand and participate in that a little bit more. But my goal is to say, okay, wait a minute, don't get too engrossed into that part of the business either, because I want to be the CEO and the strategist of the business to the point where, you know, like I had mentioned it to you earlier, you know, maybe I hire CEO of the business to mm-hmm. take that off of me, and I don't actually have to be there. I could take whatever role I want in the business. I could go, you know, I love being hands-on in the field. But, you know, at that point, I could really have the freedom to do it, because the at that point, if I could hire out my last responsibility for the business, that business is completely self-sustaining, and it's yes. And it's very high value asset for me.
Yes. And I love that that's what you're looking at, right? Right now you have to be a part of sales, and that's fine, right? We can get into it, but you know, like, I can't get sucked in and live here. I have to continue looking at how do I grow it, right? I might have to go into the field every once in a while. You know, the way I like to put it is hire people to do the things you hate, hire people to do the things you suck at. That's what we should be doing in a business. The things you're not great at, hire people that are better at it than you. Ultimately, where I know you want to be and where I would love to see everyone listening be and where I want to be with Floor Academy is I want to be able to choose what I want to do. I want to be able to walk into my company in the morning and say, today I want to do sales because that's what I want to do. Or I know there's a really cool project coming up that I want to go bid, or there's a really cool install happening, and so I'm going to go participate in that. Or there's this really cool talk we scheduled and I want to go be a part of it for 10 minutes and just chime in and try and drop some knowledge. Like, I want to choose where I want to be and what I want to do. I don't want to be forced to be there and have to do it, right? You're forced to do sales right now and you're happy to do it. I don't want anyone to take it the wrong way. Matt's happy to go be doing sales right now, but it's not ideal for him. That's he would much rather be out in the field creating some super duper masterpiece to win Floor of the Year again with you know, Hardwood Floors Magazine or Hardwood Floor Business, because that's truly where his passion lies, right? He wants to go play with the tools and have fun, and I can't blame him. That's where creative minds want to be. But how do you get there? What are the steps you're having to take to actually make that accomplishable? And how do you then hold the people accountable? And Matt's starting to put a lot of this stuff in place, and it's amazing to watch it happen and grow in real time. So I'm super proud of you, man. Like, I know the amount of work you've put in, the fights and not in a bad way, fights with yourself, fights with family, you know, long, hard discussions. Yep. None of it came easy. You've earned every single inch of rope that you've been able to extend on Craftsman Hardwood Flooring. And the rope went from probably being like 3 inches to, I'd say you got at least a good couple of feet now. You know, you really have, like, there's actually some rain there that you can let it loose, right? It's not constantly taut. And it's amazing to see. So, you know, what's something we didn't hit on, or just the one thing that you've done that, you know, really started making a difference? We're kind of nearing the end here. So what's the summary, what's an extra golden nugget? What do you got for me, Matt?
Yeah. If I were to do it all over again, I would encourage myself to really look outside of my own experience, my own knowledge, you know, really get mentorship, you know, glean from others and, you know, call people on the phone. That's when things started changing for me, was getting around other professionals and being vulnerable. And I have been accused a time or two for being overly positive about things on like social media and stuff like that. But, you know, I try to be real and, you know, like what we said, you know, I mean, there's points where, you know, we had conversations about like, oh, like, would I have to fire my own mother, you know, cause she's mm-hmm. in sales, you know, and that's tough, you know, and I never wanted it to come to that. It never did. You know, we developed through things that doesn't mean that there's not struggles and hardships. You know, there's times I wanted to throw in the towel, and there's times where I wasn't sure if we were going to make payroll, working through all of it, you know, and a lot of this has come through a lot of, you know, fire and tribulation. But like I said, you know, I would hope that this podcast episode could give people motivation and hope and like, and better strategy and, you know, reach out and, you know, invest into coaching and mentorship and, you know, really invest and develop yourself. So, you know, it doesn't have to be so hard. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, I've talked to you, you know, I'm trying to develop some structure that mm-hmm. I can share, you know, for other companies, you know, and, you know, like what you're doing. You have a tremendous resource that people can tap into, you know. As soon as I got out of my own way and thought I was, you know, the master of business, you know, that I thought I was.
Yes.
And I, you know what I mean? And I was willing to listen and take crap and, you know, have accountability with others, and listen and be humble. That's when stuff really started to change for me. So if I could give anybody a bit of advice, is, you know, be open and willing to learn, and it could save you a lot of hassle and get you there a lot quicker.
I agree. I mean, I've had to get some myself and move out of my own way and realize where my flaws are and work on them. And I also know, like, look, a lot of people aren't going to want to pay for coaching. It's, dude, I wasn't nice to you. Nobody in the mastermind, like, I've had people, I know I haven't done many exit interviews, but I know that people have left because I'm mean. And I'm not mean in a bad way. I just don't join a mastermind group if you truly don't want to move your business forward, because you're going to get called out on your crap. You're not going to come and bullshit everyone. You're there to be held accountable. And so when you try and phone it in, we're not going to have a great conversation that day, because it's nonsense. You can either work through it, or you can hang up the towel and go back to what you were doing. And so it's not always fun and pleasant. A lot of the experience is super, super great. Don't get me wrong. Like, we're moving people forward. We're building awesome businesses, but there are times where shit hits the fan and it gets real, and it's hard. There's some hard discussions and decisions to be made. And even within that, I think one of the biggest things you've done is, like myself, you've started looking outside of the flooring industry. It's not that the information within us is bad. It's that other people from other industries have found creative ways to solve problems, and we're not doing that here. And so why don't I go and look for it and apply it and bring it in and say, why aren't we doing that? Like, why is nobody grabbing that thing? And it's because we're not looking. And so I think that's another huge piece of what's been helping make you successful, is that you haven't limited yourself to one area and said, well, this is how everyone does it here. You're like, I don't care how anybody's doing it. I'm going to go find my own way to be successful and make it happen. And I'm going to develop my own systems and processes that work for myself and my team. And you're learning how to adapt things instead of developing everything yourself. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. It's already been made. Just go find a wheel you like, and then, you know, change it from like a 72 spoke to like a 5 mag or something, right? Like, I can do that design change. So, yeah. I don't know. Anything else? Do I need to stop? Is that where we're at?
I think we're just about done. And okay. I will add to what you said a little bit, though. You know, I've gleaned more from a lot of, like, my performance structure off of the garage floor or garage door industry than I have flooring. You know, we're not necessarily at the cutting edge of things in flooring. It's getting better for sure, but, you know, there's other resources out there that's easier actually to adapt to flooring than to create from scratch. And so and part of that was getting out of my own box and, you know, hearing other people's stories and getting coaching, all that kind of stuff to expand my horizons. But it's just true. It's it's amazing what you can find if you actually go look.
You're right. And it's, what is it? It's Bobby Mello. What's his name? Tommy Mello?
He's out of Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah. Tommy Mello. I think it might have started, because I sent you a podcast with him in it. And so the obsession might have started there. All right. So, like,
you sent me a podcast link, and I started following that podcast, and then that podcast had him on, and I'm going, man, this guy is doing what I'm trying to do for my business. I got to listen to this guy. It's like what you said. I would have, if I didn't have those connections, because I was, you know, living in my own box, I would have, I mean, literally, that was the chain of what was the beginning of the performance pay structure.
Yeah. I listened to a podcast that interviews spray tan artist businesses. It sounds absolutely ridiculous, but I'll tell you what, these girls are killing it on Instagram. They're absolutely, they're just like, and they come up with great ways of how to like manage their time better. They're using like automatic scheduling software on websites, so they don't even have to talk to clients. That like they're getting AI involved to answer all the questions. Lots of really cool stuff, and I'm just like, why when I go to a retail website, does none of this exist? It makes no sense to me, right? And so you don't know where a good idea is going to come from if you're not looking for it. So stop looking to our industry to solve everything. Because if they were going to do it, they would have done it already. And they haven't done it. So let's go look outside and let's start bringing some ideas in, and you be the one to save it. Help Matt, help me get excited about it. This industry is absolutely amazing, but we can for sure grab from other places and help accelerate what we're creating, because it is changing. This is not the same place that I stumbled into 7.5 years ago, eight and a half years ago. It's not the same industry. The leaders are changing. The mentalities are changing. The success rates are changing. And it's amazing to see, but it's because people are stepping up and getting a voice, getting involved, and they truly want to see some change. But they also, they're not looking to solve it from within. And I don't think we can.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the downside of this industry is that we are pretty far behind as far as, you know, all that goes. But the upside is that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for the ones that want to, you're not necessarily reinventing the wheel. We just, a lot of these opportunities are already happening in other industries. And if you can adapt it to this industry, it's a huge potential because it's wide open. You know, there's so many different avenues that you can be successful right now, just because you can be so far ahead of the curve that you could just kill it. You know, there's so many things I don't want to implement and do, because it's like what you're saying. You listen to a tanning booth episode and they got all these great ideas that you can apply to our industry that are just, it's unheard of. You're going to be so far ahead of the curve that you can gain from all that. You know, it's like, you know, when you invest in tech, when it's at its peak, there's not a lot of value there, but you know, you invest in tech when it's growing, then you know, all the people that you benefit off of all that growth. And I feel like that's where our industry is right now.
Go find the people that are being disruptive in other industries and shaking it up, and follow them. Go look for the people that are, you think are nuts. Go see what they're doing. Go see how it pans out for them. Grab that stuff and bring it over, and you're going to do just fine. Look, everybody thought I was nuts for starting this thing. We're 4.5 years in. There's over 240 episodes. There's tons of value contained within all of them. And I won't lie to anyone. It's still small. The numbers have actually gone down on listens. But here's the thing. Here's what I know is going to happen. The average age of the installer is only going up. No one new is joining, which means supply and demand will kick in the next 5 years, 10 at the most, but probably starting within the next five. Installers are going to be able to make so much more money because people aren't going to have enough installers to go around to get projects done, that rates are going to go up. Everyone's going to want to jump on that bandwagon and say, oh my gosh, trades are really lucrative. Let's get into it. And it's not just flooring, right? This is for HVAC, plumbing, welding. All of the trades are struggling in this way. Everyone and their mother's going to want to jump in. If you have the company that's set up to take people and make them successful, you're not gatekeeping, but you can add to the positivity of the industry moving forward and take care of people very well. But that's when this stuff that I'm doing is going to become very valuable. The younger generation is going to go looking for the information, and it's already there. That's when it'll explode, right? This is a long-term investment into what's going to happen within our industry that I have going on. And it's a very long-term play. I'm sitting here podcasting. Like, one, it wasn't even a job option when I was 16 years old. Like, I never thought this was going to become what I did. But then being able to see it and what the potential behind it was became very interesting to me. And I love having these conversations. What can you take? What can you develop? How can you be involved and find a way to not only move your business forward, but move the industry forward? Because that's what's going to matter. Is if you're worried about the hacks right now, think about it in 5 years when you can charge two or three times the amount that you're charging now to do a project. You don't think that everybody's going to start saying, oh, I know how to do that. They already do. It's going to get even worse. Everyone's going to go buy sanding equipment by Matt and try and sand a floor. And they're going to be done horribly. So think about it. How do you solve it? How do you start building for the future? How do you become the company that everyone's going to want to come and apply to and work with when that change happens? All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. Matt, thank you for joining me as always. I love having our conversations. I miss that I don't get to meet with you every other week, but that's okay. I know you'll be back. I know you will. What do we got? Check out the website, go to the store, buy a t-shirt, check out patreon.com/floor academy. Be like Matt. Even, you know, $5 a month goes a long way. Matt's a little more generous than that with me. So, he stands behind the show. He truly believes in the value of it and what it does. Make sure you like, subscribe, leave a comment. When you see the posts on Wednesday mornings as new episodes come out, let me know what you think, man. Give it a listen. Leave a comment. Help other people see it, build up the rhythm, the momentum behind the algorithm. Leave a review if you can on iTunes. That goes a really long way in getting it out in front of more people. And, you know, tell a neighbor. Go tell somebody in the line at the supply house that this podcast is changing how you operate your business and what it's doing for you. Get them involved. You know, if you want some stickers, I got stickers. I'll send them out to you. You can reach out to me. Just send me an email. Shoot me a message on Facebook. We'll get you so you can tag up your local supply house with stickers and share it. We'll have all kinds of fun. So that's going to do it for us. Thanks for joining me again, Matt. And we will talk to you all next week.